Lyndon Johnson. Actually, the play is entitled Lyndon, and it's from Merle Miller's prize-winning 1980 autobiography, Lyndon, an Oral Biography. It's about the late President Lyndon Johnson, and it is currently being performed in Manhattan at the John Houseman Theater at 450 West 42nd Street. And if you would like to win a pair of tickets to see this play, starring Lawrence Luckinbill, just be the first caller at 632-6901. That's 632-6901 for a pair of tickets to see Lawrence Luckinbill as former President Lyndon Johnson in the new play Lyndon by James Prideaux, adapted from Merle Miller's biography. It's at the John Houseman Theater in New York City. 632-6901 will get you a pair of tickets to see the play Lyndon. Be the first caller at that number, 632-6901. The weather forecast for Suffolk County is, for tonight, clear. The low from the upper 20s and low-lying sections to the mid-30s near the shore. Tomorrow will be mostly sunny with the high in the mid to upper 40s. Wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. And tomorrow night, partly cloudy, low in the mid-20s. And the current WUSB Stony Brook temperature is in Celsius, 5 degrees, or Fahrenheit, 41 degrees. This is Long Island's first station of the 90s. This is the Gulf War Citizen Action Update, heard every hour on the hour on WUSB Stony Brook. On Saturday, there will be a vigil at Representative George Hochbruckner's office beginning at 12 noon. Hochbruckner's office is located at the intersection of Route 347 and Wireless Road in South Setauket. Also beginning at noon in Nassau County, there will be a demonstration by United We Stand in support of the troops. That'll take place at 12 noon at the Nassau County Supreme Court building in Mineola. The Stony Brook Coalition for Peace in the Middle East will be sponsoring a teach-in on Tuesday, February 12th at 6 p.m. The teach-in will take place in Old Engineering at the Stony Brook campus, the Old Engineering Building, Room 143. Scheduled speakers include Professor Michio Kaku, Professor of Nuclear Physics at the City University of New York, and Professor Hugh Cleland of the History Department at the State University at Stony Brook. That teach-in beginning Tuesday at 6 p.m. There'll be a rally in support of U.S. troops in the Persian Gulf on February 13th at 12:30 p.m. at the Fine Arts Plaza at the State University at Stony Brook. That rally is sponsored by the Stony Brook Commuter College. And on Saturday, February 16th, there's a national campaign for peace in the Middle East. Local protest actions include the weekly vigil at George Hochbruckner's office beginning at 12 noon. And at 2 p.m., a meeting at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, which is located on Nichols Road in Stony Brook. For more information on that, call the Long Island Alliance for Peaceful Alternatives at 741-4360. If you're computer literate and you'd like to be involved in the peace movement, there's an organization known as PeaceNet. They have more than 4,000 users online. They're being used by more than 400 of the nation's most prominent peace groups, including Beyond War, Sane Freeze, and Physicians for Social Responsibility. If you want information on that, you can call them at area code 415-923-0900. Some phone numbers. The Peace in the Gulf Action Line is 212-475-7159. The Israel Line with
news and information about the latest happenings in Israel. 212-351-5333. The War Resisters League, 212-228-0450. And the Long Island Council of Churches, 516-727-2210. The Gulf War Citizen Action Update is heard every hour on the hour on WUSB Stony Brook. If you have information to share with us or comments regarding this service, please call us at 516-632-6498.
Stardate February 9th. The Milky Way galaxy is a huge collection of hundreds of billions of stars. Since we're not at the galaxy's center, we can peer outward to look toward the center. To do that this month, you'd have to be looking toward the southeast about an hour before the sun comes up. This same region is high in the south on summer evenings, but notice that we're talking about looking toward the center. We can't look at the galaxy's core in ordinary light because it's hidden by obscuring clouds of gas and dust. Other wavelengths of light that are invisible to the eye do penetrate the dust. Astronomers have known for some years that a source of intense radio emission is located in the center of the galaxy. Now they've managed to obtain the first picture of this area as it would appear in visible light. Astronomers observe the region in very red light, redder than the eye can see. They combined 5 40-minute exposures to make one sharp image of the galactic core, as the eye would see it. The image revealed 2 star-like points of light that had never been seen before. One seems to shine a few million times more brightly than the sun. This could be an extremely dense cluster of hot stars. Or it and the other point could be associated with a black hole at the heart of the Milky Way. When the galaxy's center gets higher in the sky and in a better place to observe, astronomers will turn their instruments on it and try to find out. Our program is Stardate, and we're proud to be associated with radio stations like KBIA-FM, Columbia, Missouri, WKNC-FM, Raleigh, North Carolina, and WDPS-FM, Dayton, Ohio. Stardate is produced by the McDonald Observatory at the University of Texas. And for the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
Brain Damage is underwritten by a grant from the Little Computer Shop, located in the Model Shopping Mall in Centereach. Phone number 467-4352. The Little Computer Shop stocks the latest in hardware, software, and computer publications.
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
I say, it's 7 minutes after 10 o'clock. Why the hell am I getting on the air at 7 minutes after 10 o'clock, Jim? My show starts at 10 o'clock.
I don't want
7 minutes after 10 o'clock. All right, you have an explanation for this? Go ahead.
Very quickly, although your show starts... Well, you think
it's
of it starting...
It's a non-commercial station. We just played 3 major features here.
Well, you see, the thing is, you think of it as starting at 10 o'clock, but that's really an approximate time. That's rounding it off, because technically your show is not scheduled to start until 2 minutes past 10.
All right, I'm still 5 minutes late.
Well,
no matter how
we
you
have
look
a regular feature called Star Date.
Yeah, I know.
Which usually starts at 10. But because we had the Gulf War Citizen Action Update that's supposed to run...
You remember the name of that without looking at the card.
I certainly do. It's about all that I can remember.
I wish I could do that.
Actually, I don't think you want to wish that, because then you'd have the same kind of state of mind that I have, and you wouldn't want to wish that on yourself. But that feature is broadcast every hour on the hour, and so that moves things back by a few minutes. As a matter of fact, I think that... since your voice appears on that feature, you may have something to do with making sure that that's scheduled there. So I find that kind of ironic.
There's a machine
that
in the production studio. No, there's a machine in the production studio that emulates my voice. Do not be fooled by that voice.
I haven't seen such a machine.
Simply what they do is they take your voice patterns, and you can do this too. You can take your voice patterns and shape them and store them digitally and then excrete them, I think is the term.
Well, I'm aware of that. I didn't know we had one in there. As a matter of fact, the only machinery...
It's underneath the cassette deck.
Well, the only machinery that I know
Actually,
of...
Actually, it's a little behind the cassette deck.
Well, the only machinery that I know of that approximates your voice is the broken radiator, but that's another question.
Oh, was that a shot? Was that what that was? Was that a shot just now?
Yeah.
Broken radiator sounds like my voice.
Yeah. Why
just for that, why don't you take
one of your many shots at me? I don't care.
Insist that you sit down in that chair there, because we have a full half hour of Radio Moscow coming up that I just got off from the official WUSB listening facility tonight, only an hour ago.
No kidding.
Yes, and it's going to be something incredible. And strap yourself in there, because because you're not going anywhere till
blade and airbag.
Yeah, it's going to be good. It's going to be real good. Things have changed a lot over there, you know. Well, first of all, we didn't get our Moscow mailbag tape. I don't know what's wrong with the mail. I think something is disrupting the service between Moscow and New York. But we have it tonight over the radio. It doesn't sound as good, but we do have it, and it's completely updated, and Joe Adamoff is there and everything. But that will be preceded by a couple of things. First of all, you're going to see this amazing transition as you listen to this entire programming block of Radio Moscow. And, of course, we'll be back, too, later on to take phone calls and talk about the war and all that kind of fun stuff. But we're going to start off with, are you familiar with the blockade of Leningrad? Not many Americans are, so don't feel ashamed to admit your ignorance.
You know, I'm going to take a guess. Does it have to do with World War II?
Yes, it did.
When the Nazis attempted to cut off supplies?
You are a very educated person, Mr. Wiener.
Well, no, let's not go too far now.
Well, you're more educated than most people, except maybe Andrew Goldberger out there knows something about this. He knows everything else. But this is something that that indeed happened during World War II. The Nazis tried to literally starve Leningrad to death, and they killed 600,000 people that way. 600,000 people, and they completely destroyed the city for quite some time by doing that. You can imagine the effect that would have. Mm. What we're going to hear now is the tail end of a program that comes on right before the news, which was just about an hour ago on Radio Moscow. But you can, even hearing a little bit of that, you can see the tremendous effect that such such an event has on a culture. And it's perhaps one reason why the Soviets aren't too eager to get involved in another war. A lot of other countries have experienced far worse losses than we have ever experienced. After that that feature, and we're going to be changing moods quite a bit here. You think we change around here at USB? Listen to what Radio Moscow is doing tonight. After that, you'll hear the news, roundup of the news, and some more detail as to what Gorbachev said today about the Gulf crisis, which was kind of interesting. That will be followed by Radio Moscow's Moscow Mailbag, usually heard here at WUSB on tape, the tape that they send us, but now you're going to hear the tape as it was broadcast over the Atlantic Ocean.
39 degrees.
Huh?
Oh, I wanted to correct the temperature. It's more like 39 degrees.
39 degrees.
Yeah,
right. Anyway, and then after that, there'll be a little bit of a talk on this referendum they're going to have in March to decide whether to continue with the Soviet Union. I mean, they don't do things like that here, but they're going to, you know, ask people what they think about the Soviet Union, if it should be the Soviet Union anymore, if they should split it up, or, you know, or merge with the NFL or something. I don't know. There's all kinds of possibilities
not
that
exactly
they're presenting.
Not exactly of small importance.
No, not at all. So it's not like a, you know, Bush Dukakis kind of thing. This is real, folks, real. And then after that, they go into this real crazy bit, which we're only going to hear a few minutes of, but kind of sounds like an American commercial. It's this crazy weekend fun show that they do. And there's a guy talking to you from inside his car as he's driving around listening to the radio. It's bizarre stuff, and it's all from Radio Moscow. It all was aired less than an hour ago. We got it at the official WUSB listening post, which is at an undisclosed site for obvious reasons.
No, wait a minute. I can tell where the site is. I'm going to tell. It's at...
No, that wouldn't be a good idea, Jim, because we do, you know, sometimes have, you know, clandestine broadcasts from there, too. But
no, it's located at... Isn't that a small town somewhere between Setauket and Port Jefferson?
Around there somewhere, yeah.
Wow!
Yes, and you might be spending a lot of time there soon, Jim. So,
great!
You,
lovely place.
Yeah. Now we'll be, of course, getting back later with all kinds of interesting things.
Of course, it's not as nice as Heights.
I'll just fade you down then.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Oh boy, some things are just not controllable here. It's 13 minutes after 10 o'clock. The program is Brain Damage. If you don't know why, there's probably something wrong with you. We'll be taking phone calls in just a little bit at 632-6901, area code 516. And now we're going to, where is that button? Oh, there it is. We're going to go to Radio Moscow and hear bits and pieces of their normal broadcast day. And we'll pay attention to what they say. The
interference is a little bit, you know, it can give you a headache if you get all upset by it, but you can get used to it real quick. Let's put it that way. I mean, if you can get used to Jim Wiener playing classical music, you can get used to this really quickly.
No one will ever get used to that.
Well, yeah, that's a bad example, I guess, but don't worry. I mean, this is what it sounds like.
Of resistance.
See, you can make out what he's saying. It's just going to take a little bit of practice. See you soon.
Circumstances. We have to seek out the actual process, not a version corrected in the knowledge of victory wealth. The only way to find out, to discover what took place in people's hearts, was to turn to the documents of that time. And the best of these were people's diaries, making it possible to see the inner life of the author without the corrections that stem from hindsight. The authors of diaries knew nothing of the forthcoming victory. They did not know whether they would survive, or what would happen to Leningrad, or to the country for that matter. They were beset by doubts, even despair, but even at that time, if one reads the diaries carefully, it is clear that there lived within them a faith in the triumph of justice. Finally, and this was the most remarkable thing, we could see how that faith gradually grew stronger. Even though day by day things were getting worse and worse, the hunger more terrible, and the deathly gloom was engulfing their hopes. Ale Sadamovich and Daniil Granin chose three diaries, by a historian, Georgi Knyazev, by a 15-year-old boy, Yuri Rybinkin, and by a mother of two children, Lydia Hapkina. I think, and that means I exist. This philosophical home truth helped many Leningraders to endure in the literal sense of the words. What did the scholar of history, Georgi Knyazev, think about during those days when he saw Hitlerites destroy his hometown and starve its residents to a death of suffering?
What I hear no less than the Nazi plague is chauvinist hysteria. For us, a war is sacred as a defense against attacking vultures. But it is quite a different thing when it is waged to rule another nation. And in this connection, the question arises of the real guilt of the German people who have brought such suffering to mankind. What would Hitler have done had a significant part of the German people refused to support him? It's an agonizing question.
Historian Knyazev's ideas are carried on by Yuri Rybinkin, who was just beginning to turn into an adult, but who was already thinking not only about his own destiny and the destiny of his dear ones, but the destiny of the entire human race.
How many people have lived before us, and how many of them have had to die? But it's good to die feeling and knowing that you have achieved all your dreams from childhood and youth. But to die knowing that you have left successors to carry on your literary and scientific work. But how difficult it is. What is Hitler counting on? On building an empire, the very concept of which will be cursed by future generations? And just because of some bunch of adventurers, millions upon millions of people are losing their lives. People. Human beings.
What can be more horrible than the crying of a hungry baby, recalls Lydia Ohapkina.
This crying, which was more like groaning, drove me crazy. And to make her sleep, I would let her suck my blood. My breast milk had long since dried up, and I had no breast to speak of by then anyway, barely anything left. So I would make a prick in my arm, just above the elbow, and put my daughter's mouth to it. She would suck it quietly and fall asleep. But I would have great difficulty going to sleep. I'd start counting numbers, then lose count. I remember reading War and Peace, where Pierre de Zukhov had also counted to 1,000 to fall asleep.
Having selected the three persons from the great many Leningraders, the two authors found out about the leverage that kept people alive,
I did not permit them to slide down into the abyss of inhumaneness. The reason of a scholar, the conscience of a teenager, and the love of a mother. Of course, there were other people in that starving city of millions of residents. People who crossed the final line, beyond which lies animal egotism and hungry insanity. And yet, a majority did endure. And in the grim struggle against their inner self, these people overpowered the intolerable famine, cold, death, and lack of hope. 600,000 people perished during the blockade of Leningrad, but they did not give up their city to the enemy. The 15-year-old Yuri Rybinkin, one of the 600,000 dead, wrote this on one page of his diary.
Then, in another 6 months, or possibly a year, the war will end, and Leningrad's former happy existence will be restored. Our bodies will decay, our bones turn to dust. Yet Leningrad will stand eternally on the banks of the Neva, proud and invincible. And one more thing. May God grant that there'll be a time on Earth when not one person will know hunger and war.
By a Belarusian author, Oles Adamovich, and a Leningrad writer, Daniil Granin. This unique book, based on documents, stories, and diaries of the Leningraders who endured the blockade, has also been published in English. The excerpts came to you in our weekly feature, Audio Book Club.
This is Radio Moscow. At 02 hours UTC, our North American service will be broadcasting in the 13, 16, 19, 25, 31, 41, and 49-meter band short waves. That's the North American service of Radio Moscow broadcasting in the 13, 16, 19, 25, 31, 41, and 49-meter band short waves.
Service, and this is Zina Levashova with the news. First, the main points. Mikhail Gorbachev has called for using all levers to settle the conflicts in the Persian Gulf by political means, in line with United Nations Security Council resolutions. In the Baltic Republic of Lithuania, the population has been polled on its attitude towards independence. and the Albanian defense minister has officially refuted rumors about a military takeover being hatched in that country. Those are the main points, and now here's the news in full. President Gorbachev has called for using all levers in order to settle the Persian Gulf conflict on the basis of the United Nations Security Council resolutions. In a statement issued on Saturday, President Gorbachev said that the Gulf War, the worst over the past few decades, has been taking a very alarming and dramatic turn. Casualties, including those among civilians, have been growing, and the material damage caused already is enormous. Gulf countries, at first Kuwait, after it Iraq, and in the future probably others, will face the risk of a catastrophic destruction. The Soviet president said that the country's leadership is seriously concerned about the march of events, the more so since the war is raging close to the Soviet Union's borders. President Gorbachev confirmed the commitment to the United Nations Security Council's resolutions, but at the same time said that the logic of military operations and the nature of combat were fraught with the risk of going beyond the bounds of the mandate set by these resolutions. At this critical moment, President Gorbachev urged the Iraqi President Saddam Hussein to display realism that would make it possible to pave the way for a reliable and fair peace settlement. He stated that he was urgently sending his personal envoy to Baghdad for a meeting with President Hussein. At a briefing in Air Riyadh, the Multinational Forces Command has reported that since the beginning of military actions on January 17th, Iraq has lost 750 tanks, about 600 armored vehicles, and more than 650 guns. The bulk of the losses was due to the air raids by the United States and its allies in the anti-Iraq coalition. Meanwhile, the Allied aircraft have flown more than 57 sorties attacking targets in Iraq and Kuwait. Baghdad Radio has reported that on Friday night and Saturday alone, there were 345 air raids on civilian targets and residential areas in Iraqi cities. In Lithuania, the poll of the population on the issue of that Baltic Republic's independence is over. The question proceeded calmly, and its results will be announced later. The course of the polls was monitored by foreign observers and representatives of some Soviet republics. A recent presidential decree dismissed the poll as illegal. Mikhail Gorbachev believes the republic must be affected by a nationwide referendum on the issue of keeping the USSR intact, scheduled for March the 17th. The Russian Federation's leader, Boris Yeltsin, has refuted charges addressed to him that Russia was allegedly going to break up the army or run it over to its side for aggravating the political situation in the country. Boris Yeltsin declared this in his speech to the officers of the Kaliningrad garrison and Baltic fleet in Kaliningrad region in the west of the Soviet Union. At the end of his meeting with the officers, he urged imposing a moratorium on confrontation between the center and the republics and promoting drastic social and economic reforms. Boris Yeltsin has ended his visit. There was a meeting in the Kremlin between the Soviet Prime Minister Valentin Pavlov and his Mongolian counterpart Dashen Bembasuren. Attention was focused on the development and perfection of bilateral relations in the wake of the political and economic reforms underway in both countries. The sides spoke in favor of more balanced and effective trade and economic ties through equality and mutual advantage. The prime ministers shared the view that international efforts should be vigorously applied to consolidate peace and security and promote cooperation in Asia and the Pacific. In Malta's capital, Valletta, experts at the Conference on Security and Cooperation in Europe ended their meeting on peaceful solutions to disputes today. They adopted the final document to be submitted for debate at the session of the conference's Foreign Ministers' Council to be held in Berlin next June. Experts of 35 countries of Europe, the United States and Canada looked into the mechanisms and methods of settling disputes at the present time. You're listening to the news from Moscow. The Albanian Defense Minister, Kiko Mustaki, has officially refuted rumors about a military coup being hatched in that country. The news agency Tanya, with reference to Tirana Radio, quotes the Albanian minister saying that such ideas are born in the perverted minds of those who try to take over power at any cost. The intention of the military to usurp power was exposed in a recent interview with the Voice of America by one of the leaders of the opposition Democratic Party of Albania, Salih Berish. Switzerland is to represent Cuba's interests in the United States as of April. This has been reported by the Cuban news agency Prensa Latina. A spokesman for the Swiss Foreign Ministry has said this will facilitate contacts between Washington and Havana. The United States and Cuba broke off diplomatic relations in 1961. For some time, Czechoslovakia has represented Cuba's interests in the United States. However, as Prensa Latina points out, following the abandonment of socialism in that country and Prague's unfriendly actions towards Havana, the representation of Cuban interests by Czechoslovakia was terminated last year. This country's vice president, Gennady Yanayev, has visited urban and rural communities in the Kuznets coal mining region in Siberia, where social and economic problems have become acute. In a television interview, he voiced satisfaction at the constructive talks he had with work team's representatives. Virtually, all were stressed the need for economic reforms, measures to restore order in the country, and favor a nationwide referendum. The Communist Party of Kazakhstan has held its plenum meeting to discuss the economic crisis in the republic. The party leader, Nursultan Nazarbayev, and other speakers mapped out concrete measures to stabilize the economy and provide social safeguards in conditions of transition to a market. There was an unsanctioned meeting in defense of new political prisoners held in the Ukraine's capital, Kiev, on Saturday. It was sponsored by the Ukrainian Republican Party leaders and was attended by some 2,000 people. Speakers called for stopping court actions against the lawmaker Stepan Khmaru, who's being tried on charges of illegal activity. There were calls for a referendum on keeping the Soviet Union intact to be held on March the 17th. Anti-communist slogans and remarks against the Soviet president were voiced at the rally. And now here's an announcement. Radio Moscow appeals to everybody who can help relieve the misfortune that has happened to two of our announcers, husband and wife, Yelena and Igor Chukhonsev, whose daughter is seriously ill. The doctors have found that the three-year-old child has blood cancer, leukemia. The girl is currently at Moscow's Pediatrics Institute. The best results in treating this disease have been achieved by medical specialists in Germany and Austria. A course of treatment costs $50,000, a sum neither the parents nor Radio Moscow can afford. We will be grateful to all who would respond to this call. The address for contact is Telefax 230-2828, Telex 411136, Radio Moscow, the Soviet Union. I'll repeat. Telefax 230-2828, Telex 411136, Radio Moscow, the Soviet Union. The bank account number is 670-82183. Vnesh Ekonombank, Moscow, the National TV and Radio Company of the USSR, Medical Aid for Zhenya. To WMU's The Headlines once again. We heard Gorbachev has called for using all levers to settle the conflict in the Persian Gulf by political means in line with United Nations Security Council resolutions. In Lithuania, the population has been polled on its attitude towards its independence. The Albanian defense minister has officially refuted rumors about a military takeover being hatched in that country. And that ends the news.
This is your program, Moscow Mailbag. It's Jura again to answer your questions. The first one is from Miss Sharon Phillips of Miami, Florida. If religion is tolerated more in the Soviet Union today, then why are so many Jewish people migrating to Israel?
I've tolerated concerning religion is the wrong word. Because religion today enjoys, I'd say, practically complete freedom. We hear sermons on television. Sunday schools have opened. Thousands of churches, yes, thousands, have been returned to believers. Members of the clergy are deputies to our parliament and very much more. Miss Phillips, you can take it from me, someone who's lived his whole life in this country, that 90% of the Jewish people, if not more, who are emigrating are not believers. They are emigrating because they are seeking a better life. They are seeking a higher standard of living. Now, why do you think they all used to end up on Brighton Beach, New York? And not in Israel, because the standards of living are higher in America. This was until the 50,000-a-year quota came into force, when the United States actually closed its door to a certain degree. They're also emigrating because of uncertainty for what tomorrow may bring. Rumors of an impending civil war, God forbid, pogroms, or what have you. I dare say that in the past, they did emigrate, some of them, because of overt and covered discrimination on ethnic grounds. I say ethnic grounds because in the Soviet Union, a Jew is considered a person who is Jewish ethnically. I know that in the United States, a person who is considered a Jew is a person of Jewish faith. So let me conclude. Religion has nothing to do with emigration.
Mark Hominick of Western Ontario, Canada. I want to know about the unemployment rate in the USSR.
Well, according to some experts, there are 5 to 6 million unemployed in our country. In Uzbekistan, we're told every fifth able-bodied person is not employed. On the other hand, there are millions of vacancies, strange as it may seem, in just the trade network and in the services. But you can't bring in people from other parts of the country because of lack of housing. And as a result, there are restrictions on permanent residence because of lack of housing. Then, of course, there is much labor that is freed because of cutbacks in bureaucratic personnel and automation because of automation and so on. But there is this satirical, if not tragic, side to the problem. One newspaper wrote, there are 36 million hidden unemployed in our country. In other words, those who hold a job but do nothing useful. You see, many years ago, I told the head of personnel of Soviet television and radio that I should get the Gold Star Hero of the Soviet Union. And he says, what for? I said, for cutting our staff by one-third, if not by half, without any harm to the business. He came back with, Joe, you always say the wackiest things. A month later, I ran into him in the corridor, and he says, you know, I've been thinking about what you said. I think there's a lot of truth to what you suggested.
Mr. Harris of San Francisco, California, where do you stand on the Gulf War?
You probably know that we supported the decisions of the Security Council fully, all the way up to the use of force to free Kuwait. We branded Saddam Hussein's actions as aggression, pure and simple. Some members of our parliament say Saddam ought to be punished or tried even if he does withdraw from Kuwait for his aggression. We consistently speak of human values, both you do and we do, yet the lives of hundreds, of thousands, of innocent civilians are at stake, be they Iraqis, Israelites, or civilians of the Allied nations. You must also remember that Iraq is just over maybe 100 miles or more from our Caucasian border,
our southern border,
and not too far from our Central Asian republics.
If chemical or biological
weapons are used, or God forbid nuclear weapons, these areas of the Soviet Union will be part of the contaminated zone. You see, we believe the aim should be not to destroy Iraq, and that every effort should be made and every opportunity used to obtain a political solution and force Saddam to leave Kuwait.
If he's smart,
he ought to realize the odds are against it. An alternative, of course, would be an ocean of blood,
an ecological disaster, and inevitably, of course, the defeat of Saddam.
Over to Belize now, and Gaudencio Mendes asks,
what month does Russia have its lowest temperature? And it's been quite cold, hasn't it, of late, Joe?
Yes, of late, but, you know, all of January was just a bit below and a bit above freezing, and it was the same thing last year. We practically didn't have a winter last year. Of course, the coldest month is January. In Moscow, the average January temperature, not this year, but the average is 13 degrees Fahrenheit, which is about 10 degrees Celsius. But it can get much colder. I told you about Moscow. Now, the very coldest January temperature, and the coldest temperature in the northern hemisphere, for that matter, is in northeastern Siberia. It's in the Pole of Cold, so-called, in the Republic of Yakutia, near the settlement called Oymyakon. The average January temperature there is minus 50 degrees Celsius, which is minus 58 Fahrenheit. You don't get that in Belize, do you? But it can drop to minus 72 degrees Celsius, which is minus 97 degrees Fahrenheit. But, Gaudencio, did you know that when it is that cold in Siberia, roses bloom in the subtropical regions of our Black Sea coast, just like in Florida? In northern Siberia, by the way, summer temperatures reached 95 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 35 degrees Celsius, the way it was in Arizona when I was there 3 months ago.
A few questions now from Clarence Moe, Tucson, Arizona. First, he wants to know about cable TV in the Soviet Union.
I think it would be fair to say that cable television is still in its infancy. There are, of course, small local cable television stations in many cities, Moscow included. There's one in Tallinn, in Estonia, in Leningrad, many other places. By the way, I read that one electrician in a city in the Urals opened the local cable television station, and what do you think he started showing? Erotic films. I'm told that anywhere from 3 to 6 million people watch cable television in the Soviet Union, no more. So you see, it's not much.
How was Lenin preserved?
Well, he was embalmed and placed in a glass sarcophagus in the mausoleum on Red Square. The job of embalmment, of course, is no easy one. But we're told he himself never wanted to become a symbol, an icon, that he was made after his death. He wanted none of this deification. In fact, he wanted to be buried where his mother was laid to rest. Some people here in the Soviet Union have voiced the opinion that preserving the remains to be viewed by millions sort of tends to remind one of a pagan tradition. But be that as it may, the mausoleum in Soviet times has become a landmark, a tradition, a tourist attraction, if you will, and a symbol. So, that's that. Others say to dismantle the mausoleum is sacrilege.
Staying on the subject of death, Clarence also asked, why does the USSR military use zinc coffins?
You've got some gory questions today, Clarence. It is in zinc coffins that our boys' remains were brought back from Afghanistan. And the sealed zinc coffins, you realize, preserve the remains. I think that would have been clear. But in my mind, what is important is that we have condemned our intrusion into that country. And you've got to give Mr. Gorbachev credit for that. It was he who put an end to a long and senseless war.
Tom Carpenter of Cincinnati, Ohio. Are there plans to bring American football to the USSR in the near future?
I think you're a bit behind times.
American football already has a foothold in our country. Whether it'll spread is another question. I personally have my doubts. No foreign sports or foreign games catch on very slowly and sometimes not at all. At present, we have 5 teams, and we've been admitted into the European Association of American Football. We have teams in several cities. Our best team is the Moscow Bears, which is a professional club. In September, they played Federal Germany, and our boys, on the whole, made a successful showing in the United States last year.
Back to San Francisco, and precisely to Mr. Harris again. I heard the USSR is going to hold a national referendum on whether the people want to retain the Union. Will they vote yes or no?
Well, the problem with this referendum is, as one deputy to the recent party plenary meeting said, the problem is exactly what kind of government structure do we want. Do we want a union of sovereign nations, a union of sovereign republics, or a simple concord of nations? That's the problem. And until we heard a speech by Mr. Gorbachev on the 6th of February, I think the party has been dilly-dallying in explaining this problem to the man in the street. I still think the man in the street is not quite sure of what he's going to vote for exactly. Because, in my opinion, he has to know exactly what he's voting for, because the future of our union is at stake.
Gary McElfeeney, I'm sorry if I mispronounced that, Gary, of Ravenna, Ohio. Our video cassette player and video home service popular in the USSR?
Well, they certainly are popular, but there are not many around. Last year, we produced something like 400,000 video players. By 95. An imported video sells at a fabulous price. And yes, we do have a service where you can rent video cassettes.
Is the keeping of tropical fish in home aquariums popular?
Well, there are people, mostly kids, who keep fish in aquariums at home, including tropical fish. Some are sold in a pet store that we have here, but there's also an open market that where you can buy pets. You can buy dogs, cats, birds of every size and hue, and, of course, fish.
And yet again, back to our Mr. Harris of San Francisco. He says, I understand you aim to be a nation based on law.
Well, yes, that is our aim. After we were a totalitarian state where the law court was simply an instrument of repression. Today, the courts are beginning to be independent, subject only to the law, and not to a telephone call from a party boss. Today, the court is also becoming a place where big and small may apply to defend their honor, to defend their rights. Now, the subject you've raised about a government based on law is a huge subject. One could speak about it for hours. But I'll give you two small examples. A Soviet businessman and a deputy to the Russian parliament, Artem Tarasov, accused our president of making a secret deal with the Japanese government, selling them the 4 Kuril Islands, which they claim, for $200 billion. Now, our press called this a political provocation. And what do you think we learned? That Mikhail Gorbachev intends to take Tarasov to court, unless he extends his regrets and says he's sorry publicly. Now, the press was in ecstasies that the court is now a place to defend your rights and your honor. And also, they said, let Mr. Gorbachev see the bad state of the premises where our lower courts are housed. I'll give you another example. The anchorman of one of our popular television programs, which has been taken off the air, is taking the top officials of Soviet television to court. Well, a sign of the times, if ever there was one.
Jerry Adamoff, answering your questions on Moscow Mailbag. Don't forget, this program is made up of your letters, so please write in. The address, the North American Service, Radio Moscow, Moscow, the USSR. Your comments on this show are welcome. Mailbags on the air every Saturday, Sunday, and Wednesday. And please note our new times to the East Coast at 2310 and 0210 UTC. and to the west coast at 04 and 610 UTC.
Preparations are underway in the Soviet Union for a referendum on the country's future. In keeping with the decision of the recent Congress of People's Deputies, Soviet citizens are expected to declare on March 17th if they are for or against preserving the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics as a renewed federation of equal sovereign republics. Along with working out a stand towards the referendum, the first in the history of the country, the parliaments of some republics are examining questions that would allow them to enter the renewed union in the capacity of free and sovereign states. Our commentator Vyacheslav Solovyov writes the following on this. For example, the Supreme Soviet of the Russian Federation, that's the largest of our republics, spoke in favor of holding a referendum, but decided to additionally learn citizens' attitude to the introduction of a presidency in the republic. There are other questions on the agenda of the session of the Russian Parliament, providing for the establishment of new and strengthening existing structures characteristic of an independent state. The Ukrainian parliament faces similar tasks. Its deputies, in their work, lean on the latest sociological polls, showing that many citizens of Ukraine are inclined to tackle the issue of a new union treaty only when the republic becomes genuinely sovereign. For the Ukraine, the establishment of a national bank with its own credit resources will be a principled step in that direction. This question is one of the priority issues to be examined by the current session. Ukraine has signed economic agreements with all the Union republics. Mutual deliveries under these agreements are worth many thousands of millions of rubles. Ukraine believes that it is impossible to handle such sums without a national bank. By signing these agreements, the Republic also demonstrates its adherence to the idea of the development of horizontal contacts as an underlying principle for the economic development of a future union. Incidentally, representatives of Belarusia, Kazakhstan, the Russian Federation, and the Ukraine met in Moscow recently to consider the development of contacts between the republics and their joint contribution to preparing for signing a union treaty of sovereign states. The Foreign Ministry of the Russian Federation has informed that all sides were unanimous in believing that the declarations on their state sovereignty and bilateral agreements between the republics should lie at the core of that process. The sovereignty of the republics is being strengthened by such steps, different by their nature, as the decision of the Supreme Soviet of Azerbaijan to give the republic a new name, change the state flag, and the text of its anthem, or the examination by the Parliament of Tatarstan of the question about the establishment of an Academy of Sciences of its own. Other subjects of the current union are also taking steps towards their sovereignty. This is Radio Moscow.
From Moscow, the news in brief. President Gorbachev has called for using all levers in order to settle the Persian Gulf conflict on the basis of the United Nations Security Council resolutions. In a statement issued on Saturday, President Gorbachev said that the Gulf War, the worst over the past few decades, has been taking a very alarming and dramatic turn. The Soviet president said that the country's leadership is seriously concerned about the march of events, but more so since the war is waging close to the Soviet Union's borders. President Gorbachev confirmed a commitment to the United Nations Security Council's resolutions, but at the same time said that the logic of NATO operations and the nature of combat were fraught with the risk of going beyond the bounds of the mandate set by these resolutions. In Lithuania, the poll of the population on the issue of its independence is over. The question proceeded calmly, and its results will be announced later. The Russian Federation leader, Boris Yeltsin, has refuted charges addressed to him that Russia was allegedly going to break up the army or win it over to its side for aggravating the political situation in the country. There was a meeting in the Kremlin between the Soviet Prime Minister Valentin Pavlov and his Mongolian counterpart, Dashin Gyambasuren. And the Albanian defense minister has officially refuted rumors about a military takeover being hatched in that country. And that ends the news in brief.
Weekends were made to party on Vasily's Weekend.
Yo, Governor, Mr. Weekend here in my car heading northeast on the M8 motorway to the Radio Moscow Hotel in Sofino. I'm on vacation, and you are there with me. Now, don't try to find Sofino on your maps, because you won't be able to do so. The reason is very simple. During the stagnation period, paranoia was at its height, and places like Sofino were considered military-sensitive areas. Now, what a funny place to build a Radio Moscow hotel complex, huh? In any case, times have changed. This is 1991. The month is February, and it's a time of year when Soviet college and university students like to take 10 days off and go wild. Crackers, bananas. Vasily's Weekend joins them right now in a special edition of Vasily's Weekend from the Radio Moscow Hotel. Or shall we say, Love Shack.
And, you know, times have changed when you can listen to Radio Moscow and hear the B-52s. The real B-52s, not the military version. Well, we've been listening to about 45 minutes of programming from Radio Moscow that was broadcast a couple hours ago, actually, straight out of Moscow. We heard tail end of a documentary on something that took place during World War II, the blockade of Leningrad, where 600,000 people died of starvation, something that a lot of people here don't even know about. And we heard the news reports saying that Gorbachev is having second thoughts, maybe third or fourth thoughts about this whole Gulf War that we've plunged into. And some very good reasons brought forward for that, namely... hey, guys, you know, we're right on the border here. If there's any kind of a chemical, biological, or nuclear attack, it's going to affect us. And, in fact, some people are talking about using nuclear weapons in the Gulf. Some people on our side are talking about, hey, why don't we do this? Why don't we just set off some nuclear bombs now, you know? We'll get into that a little bit later on. That's for the ultimate depression hour. We also heard Moscow Mailbag, a usual feature here on WUSB, except this time it came to us from the airwaves, not from a tape. And finally, finishing off, strange program I've never heard before, I guess designed for young people or something like that. Oh, Radio Moscow. Well, speaking of young people,
eternal God.
There'll be a lot of them next week. Here at Stony Brook.
Saturday night, February 16th at the Stony Brook Union Bi-Level, SBH and Turmoil present a benefit concert for WUSB with Bug Out Society.
What's the matter with you girls? Can't you see? We're the Bug Out Society!
The Voodoo Love Gods. And Born Against.
Ride it with Mary!
Tickets are $5 with Stony Brook ID, $6 without, $8 night of the show. Please bring some form of ID. This concert is co-sponsored by the Department of Student Union and Activities. For more information, call 632-6498.
Yes, and I believe tickets for that are on sale at the Union Box Office here at Stony Brook. So come one, come all. It's going to be a lot of fun. We've had a couple of benefit concerts already during the fall, and we're planning on having more this spring. So come by and meet your favorite WUSB personalities, or your least favorite, depending on who shows up. Well, you may have heard that Eastern Airlines has stopped flying. In fact, if you ever want to have fun, go to Kennedy Airport like I did the other night and just kind of drive around slowly looking at all the buildings. Because I went there wondering, what's become of the Eastern Airlines building now that there isn't an Eastern Airlines anymore? They had this big, huge building. And I, drove around looking at all the terminal buildings. Each major airline has a building, Pan Am, TWA, Eastern, United. But when you get to Eastern, where Eastern used to be, it's called Terminal 1, and they have all these airlines I've never heard of before kind of sharing it. It's pretty sad, I guess, seeing that. The most interesting building, though, there is the International Arrivals and Departures building, because they literally have hundreds of airlines from all different parts of the world, and that's where all kinds of strange, bizarre people pop in and out. But I'll tell you, driving around in the circle at Kennedy Airport is comprised of, you attract quite a lot of attention these days if you go around looking at buildings slowly. Sad comment on the times in which we live. I have to shake people who are following me, but I won't get into that. Anyway, the reason I brought up Eastern Airlines, I'll bet you didn't hear that Interflug has also stopped flying. That's right, Interflug is no more. I sense a lot of people at this point are asking, what the hell is Interflug? Okay, I'm going to tell you what Interflug is. It was an airline which was once the flag carrier of East Germany's communist government, but alas, it is now defunct. It was closed yesterday after plans to sell it failed. This comes from the Reuters news agency. Wolf Schoed, spokesman for Treuhandanstalt, the agency that owns 8,000 state-owned companies, says flight service is being shut down. It's not possible to privatize Interflug as an independent, internationally operating airline. The demise of Interflug GmbH, which faces liquidation, would appear to hand Lufthansa a monopoly over air routes in the recently united nation. Lufthansa declined to comment on the closing, but noted the agency had asked it to help liquidate Interflug with its 2,900 workers and 25 mostly obsolete airplanes. I'm sorry, 25 airplanes and 2,900 mostly obsolete workers. Got that backwards. Our major problem is that we are flying outmoded, inefficient aircraft in a competitive market at a time of very poor passenger demand, an airline spokesman Ebhard Eli said on Thursday with a hint of bitterness in his voice. Lufthansa was stopped last year from buying a 26% stake in Interflug by the Federal Cartel Office, which argued that it would give the German carrier a monopoly, but attempts to sell the airline intact to other bidders failed, with the front runner British Airways pulling out last month. So there you have it. Eastern, and now Interflug, and who knows what's going to happen next. This is the Gulf War Citizen Action Update, heard every hour on the hour on WUSB Stony Brook. On Saturday, there will be a vigil at Representative George Hochbruckner's office beginning at 12 noon. Hochbruckner's office is located at the intersection of Route 347 and Wireless Road in South Setauket. Also beginning at noon in Nassau County, there will be a demonstration by United We Stand in support of the troops. That'll take place at 12 noon at the Nassau County Supreme Court Building in Mineola. The Stony Brook Coalition for Peace in the Middle East will be sponsoring a teach-in on Tuesday, February 12th at 6 p.m. The teach-in will take place in Old Engineering at the Stony Brook campus, the Old Engineering Building, room 143. Scheduled speakers include Professor Michio Kaku, Professor of Nuclear Physics at the City University of New York, and Professor Hugh Cleland of the History Department at the State University at Stony Brook. That teach-in beginning Tuesday at 6 p.m. There'll be a rally in support of U.S. troops in the Persian Gulf on February 13th at 12:30 p.m. at the Fine Arts Plaza at the State University at Stony Brook. That rally is sponsored by the Stony Brook Commuter College. And on Saturday, February 16th, there's a national campaign for peace in the Middle East. Local protest actions include the weekly vigil at George Pockmarker's office beginning at 12 noon. And at 2 p.m., a meeting at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, which is located on Nichols Road in Stony Brook. For more information on that, call the Long Island Alliance for Peaceful Alternatives at 741-4360. If you're computer literate and you'd like to be involved in the peace movement, there's an organization known as PeaceNet. They have more than 4,000 users online. They're being used by more than 400 of the nation's most prominent peace groups, including Beyond War, Sane Freeze, and Physicians for Social Responsibility. If you want information on that, you can call them at area code 415-923-0900. Some phone numbers. The Peace in the Gulf Action Line is 212-475-7159. The Israel Line, with news and information about the latest happenings in Israel, 212-351-5333. The War Resisters League, 212-228-0450. And the Long Island Council of Churches, 516-727-2210. The Gulf War Citizen Action Update is heard every hour on the hour on WUSB Stony Brook. If you have information to share with us or comments regarding this service, please call us at 516-632-6498. You know, I started doing something rather interesting over the last couple of days. I had some videotapes that I made when the war started a couple of weeks ago. And actually, I had been taping a couple of days before that, too, just to see what happened, you know, for historical purposes. And already they've paid off because I've been able to pick up things that I forgot about. You know, I watched the news from 2 days before the January 15th deadline. And, you know, the coverage of the anti-war movement wasn't bad at that point. It really wasn't that bad. Of course, we thought it was bad at the time, but hell, it was nothing compared to what it was now. I mean, now it's terrible. But then they actually gave time to what people were saying. I mean, they focused on a guy speaking at Columbia University for about 25 seconds, which is a lot of time on TV, believe me. And I was able to actually watch what this person was saying, and he was allowed to make a conclusion. It was the most incredible thing. And there were polls taken of people and what they wanted, and the vast majority of people interviewed on TV anyway seemed to be opposed to this war and seemed to want to stop it at any cost, or try to find another solution anyway. Of course, all that has evaporated now that the war has started and the flag waving has begun. Well, you learn quite a bit by looking at things like that, you know? In fact, one of the announcements that we just played on the Gulf War Citizen Action Update was that of a rally today in Nassau County. In, I guess you, I don't know if to call it a pro-war rally would be fair, but certainly not a pro-peace rally, let's put it that way. Bring a peace sign there, you probably wouldn't have been welcomed. So I would consider that a pro-war rally if peace is not on the agenda. And I was listening to the radio this morning, and they were giving live reports from there, you know? Live reports from the site saying, well, there's only a couple hundred people here now, but we expect 1,000 people or more anytime soon. They're coming. They're probably busy doing something, but they're on their way here, you know? Now, you have a peace rally, and all they can do is tell you how somebody burned the American flag. You know, you might have 10,000 people at a peace rally, and one schmo burns an American flag. And everybody talks to that person, and everybody films that person. And everybody watching the peace rally at home on TV sees someone burning an American flag, and that's their view of what a peace rally is. Simply amazing. There was also, when President Bush came to New York a few days ago, came to, I believe, the Hilton Hotel, and there, of course, were demonstrators there to greet him, and they focused on the demonstrators, but what was interesting was, if you listen to the newscasts, they went something along the lines of, well, President Bush was in New York today, and of course, they gave all kinds of time to him and what he had to say, which was the usual party line. They mentioned that there were demonstrators outside, and you might have, if you were lucky, heard them say, no blood for oil a few times. Then they would go and say, but there were these people that were against the demonstrators. There were only four or five of them, but they were there. And then they gave these people 30 seconds to say, well, I think President Bush is right. Now, it's not enough that you give President Bush all this time, and you give everybody else that's speaking the party line all this time, but you completely bypass the demonstrators and go to the people that don't agree with the demonstrators, who agree with the majority of people anyway. And you have very quickly a media that only gives you one side. And you just have to ask yourself, why? Why is this? Are they so frightened of even presenting another side that they will be cast in the same light as that other side by people that despise them? Like I said from the beginning of this thing, we have got to keep a very watchful eye on the media. And this applies to anybody from any side. If you see unfairness, and I think at this stage the unfairness is really coming down hard on the anti-war people, it's up to you to call them and to tell them this, and to write letters, and to make it be known. Because there are a lot of people out there that agree, but so far they don't have the guts to speak up. Let's hope that changes. And speaking of speaking up, 632-6901 is our phone number. We're going to take calls in just a minute.
heart come with sing faster ear as they try to get you.
Time is 18 minutes after 11 o'clock. You are listening to WUSB in Stony Brook. And the program is Brain Damage. Our telephone number is 632-6901, area code 516. All set to take some phone calls here. By the way, it's music of Chicago underneath us. This is from 1968. And we heard a prologue. Where is that written? We heard prologue. Someday, and right now we're hearing Liberation. August 29th, 1968. They just don't make records like this anymore, you know? Anyway. Our phone number again, 632-6901. We've got a lot of people on the line. We're going to get to you in just a moment. I just want to bring up one thing I saw in the paper, and then we'll get right to this. This is something everybody should have seen in the paper. I hope you all did, because this is shocking. Hate to use that word, but this is shocking. The question seems to creep into nearly every news conference or interview with administration officials, from President George Bush down: should the United States use nuclear weapons in the Persian Gulf War? Bush himself has admitted his answer to that question is very fuzzy, because he told reporters on Tuesday, I think it is better to never say what option you may be considering. He replied with a terse no when asked, have you in your own mind made a decision on use of weapons of mass destruction? Vice President Dan Quayle said in a television interview last weekend that he could not imagine Bush would use nuclear or chemical weapons against Iraq under any circumstances. You know, that's the first thing I've ever heard Quayle say that I agree with passionately. I mean, would like to agree with passionately. I mean, he seems to understand that this is not exactly, a cool thing to do. But Quayle says you can never rule any options out, but I can't imagine Bush doing it. While at least one member of Congress openly advocates tactical nuclear weapons as a way to shorten the war against Iraq, a broad range of diplomatic and military experts are allied in opposition to such a move. Moreover, some military experts argue that an array of not-yet-used conventional weapons could achieve as much militarily as a nuclear blast without the horrendous political fallout. And the other fallout as well. But Representative Dan Burton, Republican of Indiana, in a House speech Tuesday, suggested that low-yield tactical nuclear weapons should be used against dug-in Iraqi troops before any ground assault is launched. Can you imagine that? Somebody would actually think of this? The United States has about 8,100 tactical nuclear weapons, gathering dust. Several hundred nuclear warheads are thought to be aboard U.S. ships in the Gulf region, although none are believed to have been supplied to ground troops in Saudi Arabia. Such short-range or battlefield weapons include bombs, missiles, artillery, and landmines, and are used to influence the outcome of a specific battle. They tend to have smaller explosive yields than the long-range strategic nuclear weapons, those used to threaten the homeland cities of an enemy. While an intercontinental ballistic missile may carry several warheads, each with a yield equivalent to 335,000 tons of TNT, some nuclear artillery shells for battlefield use have equivalent yields as low as 100 tons of TNT or as high as 12,000 tons. The bomb that leveled Hiroshima during World War II was equivalent to about 13,000 tons of TNT. The United States should use everything at our disposal before we send our young Americans into a meat grinder, said Burton, a four-year term of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. To do less would be inhumane, in my opinion. It's that same argument all over again, you know? We're going to go to war to preserve peace. We're going to use nuclear bombs to prevent a massacre. Representative Newt Gingrich, Republican of Georgia, the House Minority Whip, disagreed yesterday with a call made, actually this was 2 days ago, with a call made at a conference of conservative activists for using tactical nuclear weapons in the Gulf War. It just doesn't make any sense to me. If we establish a pattern out there that it is legitimate to use those weapons, our children and grandchildren are going to rue the day. And several military experts say the Allied air bombardment of Iraqi targets, while heavy, has not yet included some of the more powerful conventional bombs. Bruce Blair, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and a specialist in nuclear weapons, said his calculations indicate it would take 1,000 Hiroshima-sized bombs to destroy the elite Republican Guard troops now deployed in Kuwait. A wide dispersal of troops accounting for the high estimate. That's beyond the pale, he said. More limited use of tactical nuclear weapons to cut a swath through entrenched Iraqi troops has a major downside, Blair said. Because of the resulting radiation, you couldn't run your troops through the area for some time. It would actually delay you for days. Blair said the United States would lose all moral high ground if it used nuclear weapons against Iraq. It would break the taboo that has existed since the United States dropped atomic bombs on two Japanese cities late in World War II. Blair said, and would lower the threshold for use of nuclear weapons in future wars. And although the use of the weapons against Iraq would not break the provisions of the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty the United States has signed, Jack Mendelson, deputy director of the Arms Control Association, said it would break long-standing U.S. policy never to employ such weapons against a non-nuclear state, as Iraq is believed to be. America has a vision of itself as a moral leader of the world, he said, predicting that such a vision would be destroyed if we use an immoral weapon for even a moral purpose. It would make it impossible for the U.S. to operate in the Arab world, it would turn them against us for a generation or more. Several hundred thousand lifetimes. That article came from yesterday's Newsday. But the mere fact, you know, that they're actually considering this, you know, that leads you to believe that war is a disease. It just keeps getting worse, and that's why people want to stop it. Can you imagine using... it used to be unfathomable. We would never think of using nuclear bombs, and now, well, maybe we should to save some lives. As a first strike. Tell you, the day we use a nuclear bomb, that's the day my American flag catches fire. And I hope a lot of others do as well. That's the day this country really dies. Okay, now I'm all depressed. I don't know about you, but that's something that just is so... It makes you ill. Makes you really doubt where things are heading. 632-6901 is our telephone number. We've got a packed switchboard here. We're going to try to get to... Well, we will get to everybody on the switchboard now. But if you get a busy signal, just hang up and try again. We promise we'll get to you. 632-6901. Tell us what you think about the Gulf War, about nuclear weapons, about the peace movement, about yellow ribbons and American flags. You know, it's against flag etiquette to fly an American flag on an antenna. I read that in the paper the other day. But I won't tell. Good evening.
Hello.
How you doing?
Hello, this is Sammy.
Sammy, how are you?
How you doing, Eric?
Okay. It's been a long time since I've heard your voice.
But I've been away again, and over the winter I go away.
Uh-huh.
I'm back.
Oh,
I got
that...
some questions about the Iraqi war.
Okay.
I don't understand some of this stuff. What's a Spud missile? Like a potato or something they're shooting?
Scud missile, Sammy. Scud.
Okay. I heard it wrong on the radio.
Yeah.
I didn't have a TV where I was.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Who are the Republican gods?
That's an interesting name for them, isn't it?
Yeah. Are we fighting a Democratic god, too?
I wonder, you know, do they even exist? We haven't heard a thing from them. We just keep saying they're there, they're waiting for us, and meanwhile, every report that you hear on the radio, I mean, nobody, you know, no Americans have died in this war, apparently. Maybe about 12 of them have died. It's the most incredible thing. Meanwhile, probably tens of thousands of Iraqis have died. It's the most one-sided thing I've ever seen.
Yeah,
but we've got this...
well orchestrated, and it's a lot of propaganda.
Uh-huh. That's you got it. You hit it right on the head that time, Sammy.
You know, and I wonder where, like, I'm not anti-American, but where are all these flags before this? Where are these people waving their flags on Memorial Day, at least on Memorial Day?
Uh-huh. Well, I think it's just kind of a fad.
On Memorial Day?
It's kind of a fad. People, you know, want to jump on the bandwagon. Also, I see a lot of people doing this out of fear because they don't want to be seen as unpatriotic, you know? And, I'll tell you, it's.
Well,
if you're viewed in that way, it's not the worst thing that can happen to you. The worst thing that can happen to you is that you cover up where you really are.
I don't think you should be fighting someone else's war like that.
Uh huh. It is someone else's war. You're right. It is not our war. And is it worth the tremendous? I mean, look what we've got here. We've got oil slicks. We've got huge fires burning out of control. We've got 500,000 American lives at risk, and now we're considering using nuclear weapons. You know, I mean, don't you think that's a bit much for? For one rotten little country that never even, allowed women to vote?
Big ones?
Sorry?
Are they dropping... They're thinking of using tactical nuclear weapons?
Can you believe this? I'm still shocked, even as I speak.
My God, if they do that, there'd be nothing but problems.
That's certainly true.
And they knock out all the cable companies all across the United States, and then the people get up in arms.
That's what it takes, you know? It takes something like that to disrupt your lives, and that's when you really start to see.
My friend Jim... ...to price up on the stamp than when if we go to war. He's right.
Uh-huh. Well, that's certainly something. Sammy, I gotta have to go to some more calls.
I appreciate the talk to you, Eric, and
okay.
I hope that you're feeling better.
Well, I mean, not depressed.
That's right.
Okay, yeah, I gotta start reading the papers and I'll feel just fine.
Throw the paper out.
Yeah, okay. Thanks.
Give it to the bird.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Good night.
See you later. Always cheers me up to hear from Sammy, but this is gonna take a lot of cheering up, folks, especially if people don't start speaking up about this. Nuclear weapons. Boy, you know, we keep hearing, you know, we're at war, right? Our country is at war against Iraq. Now, everyone has gotten on this big patriotic bandwagon saying, well, it's what we're doing over there now is justified because they're a threat. They're a threat to Kuwait. They invaded Kuwait. This madman Hussein has got to be stopped. So, it's justifiable for us to go over there and bomb things. Hopefully just military things, but if some civilians get in the way, hey, that's the price of war. That's the price of the battle, right? That's what war is all about. I mean, is that right? Is that how you feel? Is that what you're saying, that what we are doing is right? Okay, I'll grant you that then. What we are doing is right, but there's another side to that. Another side that we have yet to see. Somebody who supports the other side. Somebody who has sympathy for the Iraqi cause. Using your logic, has every right to go around New York and blow up everything he can find in the name of his cause. And you've made it all right by saying it's okay for us to go in there and bomb you guys. They haven't bombed us. We have not been bombed since Pearl Harbor. And that's the other side of the world, too. I'm talking mainland United States. We haven't seen a single thing. Is that what we want to see? Is that what we want to have happen to us? There would be nothing wrong with it. Nothing at all, because we're at war. And this is what happens when you are at war. Right now, no, we're not at war, because we've got our guys over there, and they're bombing the country over there, but nobody's bombing the country over here. And for a war to exist, you've got to, you've got to fight on both sides. And so far, there just has not been a response directed towards us. So I think that's something to think about when you say, let's plunge into a war and let's defeat the enemy. Well, they're going to try to defeat you. So far, they don't seem to be trying very hard. But that could change. That could change this week. You know, they could blow up a military establishment and kill 1,000 people and God knows how many civilians. It could happen. And you have to understand, when you are at war, you have to expect such things to happen. I don't think the gravity of that has sunk in yet. And maybe if we thought about this, if we realized that, hey, you know, that's something that could occur as a result of our policy, well, maybe this policy isn't that good an idea, you know? It's something if you can just go in and change things, but if you get involved in something much deeper than that, something that's going to last much longer, what do you say then, huh? Are we in it too deep now to pull out? 632-6901. Area code 516. Good evening.
Yeah, hi. I noticed that I'd like to do a little psychological insight on some of your beliefs.
Okay.
I think a lot of the underlying beliefs in your views are really that you hate America, and that, you know, we've been building up all these nuclear weapons to someday preserve the peace, and for our great vice president to advocate that is not a bad or wrong thing. Many lives could be saved if we were to use tactical nuclear weapons against troop strongholds in Kuwait.
Many lives or many American lives?
Many American lives.
Do you think an American life is greater than an Iraqi life?
In this case, it's a clear battle between good and evil. You know, to not act is to act.
Well, let me ask you this. Is this an...
expansionist tyrants is to encourage them to expand further. And I'm wondering if your viewpoints have incurred any more FBI tales on you.
FBI tales?
Yeah.
Why? Is the FBI tailing me?
Well, I'm asking you.
Well, you said any more, as if they've been tailing me.
I've heard rumors.
Uh-huh. Okay, well,
I think your views are very destructive. And, you know, a lot of what computer hackers do is very destructive also.
Oh, you're bringing computer hackers into this now. Well, I don't think computer hackers have anything to do with this. I mean, let's stick to one subject.
Oh, I'm just examining your destructive views. Your destructive views toward this country.
Well, I think questioning policy is what the country is founded upon. What's destructive is when you try to stifle that.
And it seems to me that you're saying since there weren't more American casualties in this war, it's not really a fair war.
No, it's not. This is not a war. This is just, a series of bombing raids. And
the United States has declared war on the country of Iraq.
No, we have not declared war on anybody yet. That's kind of the ironic thing. We are at war, but we have not declared war.
Well, what was the congressional vote and the Senate vote?
That allowed military
authorization
action.
Of the use of force, in other words.
Not the same thing.
Yeah.
It's like Vietnam was never declared either. That doesn't change anything for the people over there. I realize that, but it's just a technical term.
I think there's a lot of destructiveness to your leftist views, and a lot of the American people don't, think this way.
Well,
thank God that you have the right to say this on public radio, which is funded by, individuals' tax dollars. I think that's a great thing. You wouldn't be able to say this on Mother of Battles Radio in Iraq.
Well, now, let me clear you up on a couple of things. First of all, this is not tax money. This is a station is funded by students at Stony Brook and by individual contributions.
Right, and it's also funded by the State University of New York, which gets
through
funds from, state taxes that are taken out of everyone's paycheck.
Well, it's through the student. I don't want to get into a big argument about how we're funded. That's not the point here. The point is we allow free expression, something which seems to be in danger in this country these days.
There's never been such a preponderance of free expression in the United States as there is today. You can look at the amount of small press publications.
And look at the amount of censorship, too, sir.
For processor, for individuals to do their own newsletters and communication has never been greater. The diversity of ideas has never been greater in this country as it is today, and it's a liberal myth that it's not.
Then explain to me the two live crew. Explain to me Mapplethorpe. Explain to me all the monitoring that goes on for dangerous ideas, the questioning of Arab Americans by the FBI.
Dangerous ideas, people who are destructive toward our own country, who insist on persecuting the country, should be stopped.
So you're saying...
allowed to do so. Now, I'm not saying Mapplethorpe is, but I don't advocate... I don't want to have my tax dollars fund a performance artist who's going to urinate on the American flag.
Well, again, you pick an extreme example.
It is an extreme example. Just like CBS News will point out that the Pentagon is spending $1 million for a toilet seat with tax money.
So, are you going to not fund the Pentagon? I mean, let's apply this both ways.
It seems that Reagan is still blamed for a lot of the problems in this country. Well, I say thank God for his military buildup, because now we're using things like the Patriot missile.
Yes.
And it's saving lives in Israel.
But it's a war that we started. Period. I mean, Hussein started the crisis, we started the war.
And another thing, you talk about sanctions, diplomacy, negotiations. When someone steals something from someone else, they don't negotiate whether they're going to give back part of it. They have to give back the whole thing. And Governor Cuomo and some of these other politicians who voted for sanctions are going to be out of office when this liberation of Kuwait is complete, because those views translate into their views of criminal justice. When someone steals something from someone else, you know, that person must give it back and be punished not to do it again. They don't negotiate. If I steal something from your wallet, I should have to give it back, the whole thing.
We don't live in an ideal
world.
Need
a part or a portion of it.
Mm-hmm.
Or examine the Palestinian problem. Deflect the issue. Deny what's really going on here. It's a classic view, classic battle between good and evil. Saddam Hussein, it just came out in the liberal press, Newsday, that the German companies are built gas chambers in Iraq with the same gas that they used to gas 6 million Jews. With
the same gas, huh?
Xylon B, I believe, is the name of it. And they claim that the gas chambers are for cats, dogs, and donkeys. And
do you know where a lot of the
chemical of Iraqi propaganda?
Do you know where a lot of the chemical weapons came from? Do you know where a lot of a lot of Saddam Hussein's strength came from?
Well, the United States sold him a lot of weapons.
So why did we do that if we have such a clear view of what good and what bad is?
You don't believe in temporary insanity? You don't believe that the human capacity to do great evil? People go nuts all the time.
Are you saying we went nuts when we sold them this stuff?
I'm saying the Saddam Hussein went nuts when he's an ally of the country and then turns on us. And when someone does that, even if they're turning on us, even if he's turning on us with our weapons that we sold him, he must be stopped.
Now, okay.
Clear as night and day, and the anti-war movement is really, the underlying belief there is they don't like the country. They don't like the United States. We're a bad country when we're the fairest country in the world in history.
Sir, have you ever been to an anti-war rally?
Oh, yes, I have.
When was the last time you were at an anti-war rally? Did you go to the one in Washington,
D.C.? I wasn't at an anti-war rally. I was at an anti-nuclear, it was a anti-nuclear rally.
Uh-huh.
Nuclear weapons rally.
Uh-huh.
And this was in New York in 1982.
I remember that one. That was a couple of 100,000 people. This is different. Washington, D.C. a couple of weeks ago, I never saw a more patriotic rally in my life that I was a part of. More flags than you could imagine. This is not about anti-Americanism. This is about not agreeing with the policy and wanting to bring our troops home before they get killed, before they kill more people, and before this thing gets out of control. And it will get out of control.
Doing that by bombing Baghdad relentlessly with 50,000 sorties to date is that Iraq is the most militarized country in the world, the equivalent of the Fourth Reich, and it must be stopped before they kill more people. And sometimes you have to resort to war. Ben
Why
Franklin
is
said
it?
There has never been a good war or a bad peace.
Why is it a year ago nobody cared about Iraq?
Well, look what happened in the past year. Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait.
A country Kuwait,
the raping of Kuwait, one of the wealthiest countries on earth, an ally of ours.
A country we know nothing about.
Okay, so if the American people don't know much about Kuwait, is that justification for stopping the bombing, stop the talking? You know, there was a pact between Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, and Winston Churchill. You know, and Adolf Hitler turned around and invaded Poland after it was signed. You know, I don't believe that you recognize destruction in your own life or evil in your own life.
What I'm saying is Kuwait...
Liberal media press to have your beliefs solidified.
Kuwait is not this little innocent land that was raped by another... I mean, they were invaded, yes. And, you know, they are not a democracy. They're not... something that we are fighting for our freedom of speech. They're another authoritarian regime, just with different people in charge.
Okay, well, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Really can't debate this any further. I stated my views, and I thank you for allowing me the time on your show.
Okay, I hope no one objects to that too much and cuts us off because of their tax money or whatever. Oh, I hate those arguments. Well... It's always good to hear from people from the other side. If you're out there, give me a call. 632-6901. Good evening.
Hi. I just calling. I was just wondering what you thought about the Yellow Ribbon thing.
Well, you know, I like Yellow Ribbons. I really do. And I think a lot of people are wearing Yellow Ribbons that don't agree with the war. And I think the media is missing this completely. I mean, I know a lot of people that went to D.C., that wore yellow ribbons, and hey, I agree with you wearing yellow ribbon because that personifies the war. That makes you realize there's human beings over there, our friends, our neighbors, our relatives, and we want them back.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what the yellow ribbons state. And I don't agree with people that you know that take the yellow ribbon to mean what they want it to mean only, and by wearing a yellow ribbon you support the war. I don't think that's true.
Yeah, I just wondering what you thought about it because you know I've heard two interpretations of it.
Uh-huh.
Like you know my mom thinks that it means that you support what our boys are doing, what the soldiers are doing, rather than you support the fact that they're human beings.
Uh-huh.
So you know if you support them because you know you're supporting their cause, it means a completely different thing.
I would say, you know, I looked at my videotape from a couple of weeks ago, and there are people with yellow ribbons on their doors and on their cars, who were saying, let's not have a war. Let's stop this now while we still can.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the yellow ribbon had a meaning then of people in a foreign land that really should be home.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it boils down to. And you know, I do agree with having yellow ribbons. I think it's a great way of expressing that. But keep in mind, it can mean a lot more than you expect it to mean.
Yeah. Another thing.
Yeah.
Like, there's all this coverage of this war, and people concentrate on this war so much. But I was thinking that there have been so many wars, and just because they don't have Americans in them, you know, there's not a lot of coverage, there's not a lot of talk about them.
Excellent point.
Is that like a closed-minded viewpoint, or is that just because, you know, our neighbor could be in the war?
Well, you see, we live in kind of an isolated society. We don't know it because it's such a big society, but we are isolated from the rest of the world. We didn't really care about the 8-year Iran-Iraq war, where there really were horrible things going on both sides.
Yeah, that's why we think, that's why it's no big deal to us that he's, you know, chemical weapon bombing his own people.
Uh-huh.
If he was chemical weapon bombing his own people and jacking up the price of oil, we would have started a war then.
Yeah, and we could have started wars against so many other countries too, Libya, Iran.
Yeah.
There's no end, virtually. I just think that, you know, to compare this to World War II and Hitler does us tremendous injustice to people that survived that.
Yeah.
Because I don't think there's any comparison between what Hitler was doing. What Hussein does not enjoy the same kind of popular support that Hitler did, with the almost fanatical, most definitely fanatical support that he had.
Yeah.
He truly was a threat to mankind, no question about it.
Yeah.
Now, Hussein has invaded one tiny country, and he's done that for the riches that this tiny country was virtually rubbing his face in.
Yeah, another thing is, I mean, I'm not saying that what Hussein is doing is the same, but Kuwait, a lot of the rich people in Kuwait, a lot of the hierarchy, the aristocracy in Kuwait, they were hiring, like, slaves, pretty much, from out of...
Oh, absolutely. Only about 30 or 40% of Kuwaitis are Kuwaitis. Let me rephrase that. 30 or 40% of people who live in Kuwait are Kuwaitis. I think it's... I think it's 1 in 23 people is a millionaire.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, it's like somebody invaded Hollywood. You'd have a disproportionate view of the whole thing.
Yeah, and the people who work for them are not working for them because they get money for it. They're working for them because they're not being oppressed or whatever.
It's kind of like a pseudo-country in a way because, you know, all the other countries around there are living in poverty, and here's this one country that, hey, everything is great.
Yeah.
And you could sort of see why there's resentment, and I would think the intelligent way to deal with it is to try and make sure that resentment does not flourish. Unfortunately, we didn't try that at all.
Yeah, we're responding to the injustice that Hussein did, but for I don't know how many years Kuwait's been around, we don't say anything about it. We don't do anything about it because it doesn't concern us.
Mm-hmm.
Very isolated, like you were saying.
Right. If we have a world view of what's going on around the planet, these kind of things cannot happen, and that's where the UN fails us,
mm-hmm.
because they just they somehow are not able to do that, and it's really sad because this whole thing could have been avoided, and I still think we can get out of this without it getting much worse.
Yeah.
But damn, we've got to try, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that can really depress you about the situation today, but you got to think that, you know, 25 years ago there was still segregation, and you know. That 15 years ago, there were people who thought that Vietnam was an okay war, which was a lot more outrageous than this.
Uh huh. Yeah, I mean, it was different. I really hate when people say that the demonstrators here are responsible for the way the troops were treated when they came back from Vietnam. Most of us weren't even around then.
Yeah.
And basically, what they forget is that the Vietnam War was bad planning on the part of the government. Very bad planning. A war that could not be won. An unjust war, and the government turned its back on the Vietnam veterans when they came back. So if you're going to blame anybody for the failings of Vietnam, blame the government. Don't blame the people, because the people just wanted to stop the insanity, as they do now.
And that guy who called before that said you were very destructive. No one's views in this country are destructive. It's their own,
right.
It's their own way to try and change the government, you know, to whatever they believe in.
Mm-hmm.
If they believe that, you know, we should change our national flower, and they're going to say it. Maybe someone else thinks, "Fuck you, it'd be the rose or something." You know, it's completely different.
Mm-hmm.
It's it's not like nothing is destructive.
Yeah. Okay.
It can be destructive unless, you know, you aim a gun at someone and say, make this the law.
Uh-huh.
But if you just say it, you know, the government, it's not like the government has to do it. So it's not destructive.
Exactly. No, we're, you know, free expression, free society, and people that feel that's a threat, you gotta wonder what their agenda is. Listen, sir, thanks very much for calling.
All right.
And phone number is 632-6901. Let's try to get through these remaining calls. And yeah, you know, it's something when that kind of view is espoused, where, you know, what you say is a threat. And you'll find, you know, lots of times I don't like to argue with those people. I just sort of like to give them enough rope to hang themselves, you know. Hear exactly what's on their minds and see just where they're coming from. Hopefully others will realize what they're really saying. Good evening.
Hi, Eric.
Yeah.
Hi, my name is Jason. I'm a student activist. I'm a high school student.
Well, God bless you.
Thank you. Just a couple of things. I'm referring to the caller that your last caller referred to, the one who said your views were destructive, and thank God you're allowed to express your destructive views, and I happen to agree with most of your destructive views. Anyway, he said it was a matter of good and evil. Us being the good, I would assume that's what he meant, and Iraq being the evil. But, I mean, does it bother these patriotic, you know, Americans that we're pretty much in bed with Syria right now?
Of course.
Which is the epitome of evil in the region.
This war could just as easily be against Syria if just a couple of things were changed. And we would be, you know, the same people would be just as passionate against Assad, who they probably don't even know about now. It's like all of a sudden everyone is so educated on the evils of Saddam Hussein. I mean, I'll bet most people don't even know who the ruler of Kuwait was.
Right.
Or anything like that. So it's, yeah, it's very ironic and disturbing that that it's okay for us to just, you know,
right.
be in
bed. Well, what's really interesting is that James Baker, and this is a quote, he said September 19th, which is before it escalated into what we have now in the Middle East, he said, we have problems with the support of terrorism, but we share a common goal, and he was referring to the government of Syria. Now, I mean, that's a bit hypocritical of the United States to, or the American public, to now say, well, Iraq are these awful terrorists, when you look back to the bombing of Pan Am Flight 103 over Lockerbie, Scotland, where it was proven that the government of Syria was actually, in fact, responsible for that bombing, and other various terrorist actions over the years, over the 80s. And also a couple of other things that you mentioned before, something referring to the media.
Uh-huh.
You said that, well, something I'd seen on February 26th, I wasn't in Washington, I was organizing here, and on channel, I think it was NBC News, it was actually National News, they had a four-minute spot on the rally on the 26th, where 250,000 people were, and they gave about 2 minutes to a bus driver who refused to drive, somewhere in Missouri, who refused to drive protesters to Washington, because they were protesting, and he was a Vietnam vet or so on, but they were doing the story on him, and then they gave the last 2 minutes of the bleep to the actual protest in Washington, but it was all overshadowed by this strong patriotic man who refused to drive his bus to Washington because he didn't agree with what the protesters were doing, and he handed in his key. So, again, that's how the media is slanted.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't agree with you more, and I think it's our responsibility to find alternative sources other than the three networks, CNN and Newsday and New York Times.
Yeah, but at the same time, I don't encourage people to just turn off the TV set and walk away from it, because it's still going to be on that TV set. You've got to change it, and you've got every right to change it. A couple of weeks ago, the Fairness of Accuracy in Reporting people had demonstrations all throughout New York where they...
Right, I was there. That was on the 30th.
Okay,
the 30th.
That has an effect.
Mm-hmm.
That
it does
got
have an
reported.
Effect. Something that was also very interesting is that they quoted them in The Voice. Sue Simmons of Channel 4 News and a reporter on Channel 11 News both made very negative, on the air, negative comments about the protesters, saying that they were blaming the news givers for the actions of the newsmakers or whatever, kind of, you know, blaming the messenger for the message. And there were two comments made on major television, which is just another bias, I think, against protesters. Another point I wanted to bring up was the nuclear question.
Okay, make that your last point, because I want to get to a couple
of
points.
Okay, sure. Stormy Norman Schwarzkopf, and you didn't mention this, actually asked permission to test nuclear warheads, in tactical nuclear warheads in the desert terrain to see how or what the terrain would have an effect on them. And that's even more scary. And a question I wanted to ask you, because I wasn't alive during the Vietnam, I mean, towards the end I was, but I don't remember much about the Vietnam era. And we're 3 weeks into the war, supposedly kicking butt, as the president says, and we're talking about using nuclear weapons. Vietnam lasted 12 years. Was there, if any, talk of using nuclear warheads or against the Vietnamese?
Well, I know there was talk of it during Korea and in various parts of China. There may very, I wasn't really around for Vietnam either, but there may very well have, I mean, I'm sure there were zealots that wanted to do this.
I know there was also the Soviet question, which might have hindered that a bit.
Uh-huh.
Because the Soviets were also involved extensively, and then the threat of their retaliating using nuclear weapons were that. But I'm just saying, I mean, we're 3 weeks into the war, and supposedly it's successful going according to plan. So doesn't it make you wonder, wait, what's really going on if we're actually talking about such a devastating...
Well, I think you might have answered your own question there. You said that Schwarzkopf had requested permission to test these weapons. I think a lot of what we're seeing here is a test of all our new technical weapons to see how they work.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a war that could have so easily been avoided. So it's something that... And the whole thing is being manipulated so professionally. The things that we're hearing, we're only hearing from the Pentagon. We're hearing of tremendous victories. So, of course, people are going to be supportive of the war, and that's the best opportunity to test things that otherwise would be morally reprehensible.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one final point before I go to the next call. You know, you take people that that have this this real zealous view of things, saying how we stand for what is right and everybody else can just literally go to hell. All you have to do is just replace a couple of words and you've got the exact same speech coming from people in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
The same zealotry that we find so offensive is what we use to defend ourselves.
Right.
And that's, you know, when you see that, it's a 1984 scenario, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Eurasia or East Asia, which is it? Thanks so much for calling, sir, and keep on thinking.
Keep up the good work.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, let's see if we can get through some more of these calls. Good evening.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hi. Oh, let me just turn down my radio here.
Okay.
Yes, I was, excuse my language, but I'm getting quite upset, all right? I was at the anti-war rally across from Hockbuckner's office.
Uh-huh.
A few weeks ago, Ward Melville was protesting. Yeah, Chuck, turn it up just a bit. And they're using slogans like, hell no, we won't go. They're not going anywhere, you know?
Well,
I mean,
not yet.
No, you know, just as well as I know, there isn't going to be a draft. I can tell you that right now. George Bush knows that will be his number one mistake if he brings back the draft.
Okay, maybe it's the wrong chant to use then. What's your point?
And second of all, they're saying no blood for oil. It's a very well-known, I don't know if it's well-known, but it's a fact. Only 12% of our oil comes from that region. Now, tell me this. How can it be a war of oil when only 12% is nothing? How can it be a war of oil when only 12% comes from this region?
Well, let me ask you this then. How come the oil prices shot up after the first week of the invasion?
That's very easy to answer, because the people, the businesses, people like Amoco and Texaco are taking advantage of the situation. They were saying, hey, look at this, people make the connection, Middle East oil, war, let's jack the price up 50 cents.
So you think if...
It has nothing to do with us.
You think if there was no oil involved at all, we would still be involved in this mess?
Positive. This is not a question of oil, this is a question of what would you say to a Kuwaiti who's been raped, whose sister has been killed, his mother's been raped, or vice versa? What would you say to that person? Oh, sorry, you know, we can't help you. This is a war of oil.
So the same thing I'd say to someone from Tibet, someone from Palestine, someone from Lithuania.
I tell you, I wish we
South
could go
Africa.
In there. I wish we can go into South Africa. I wish we can go into Beijing to liberate those people.
But we never will. Why is that?
I have no idea. And I tell you, if we went into Beijing, I'd be the first person to sign up.
Okay, but I suggest you ask yourself why we're only going into Kuwait and not all these other places.
And
South America,
point,
too, you know?
My third point.
Yeah.
I'd like to ask you if you're wearing Bugle Boy jeans tonight.
No. Good evening.
How you doing?
Yeah. I'm fine, sorry. How are you?
Am I in the air right now?
Yes, you are.
Yeah, I am. Okay. I have a couple of small points to make. You're talking about your solution, like, you know, as if you know a way to do it better than to actually have a war with these people. What is your solution other than war?
Well, peace, I think, is always better than war. Okay, it's kind of simplistic, I know, but at this point, I think that we have to start talking ceasefire. We obviously have the advantage here,
right?
And Saddam knows that. And if we, if we do something slightly diplomatic, like we should have done all along, we might just end this thing without any more bloodshed.
Okay, so if we pull out, you're expecting him to comply with some kind of, sanction we put on him, like to get out of Kuwait. You really believe he'll get out then?
I don't think he's got a choice. The question is how is he going to get out and when? Obviously, he can't stay there forever, okay? But if we demonstrate that we've got a lot of patience in this matter, I think it's going to work out to our advantage. I mean, look, if we go in there and we have this big, major, bloody war, are you telling me that's better than waiting 2 years for sanctions to take effect?
You know, it's possible. I think we might have done the right thing by getting him now before he does have the capability to launch possibly nuclear weapons on neighboring countries.
Well, I agree with that, but don't you think it's better not to give him that capability? I mean, it's not like he developed it on his own.
That's not the point. The point is that
he might have that capability
and it must be stopped.
Right, but how did he get that capability? He got it through the United States and through the Soviet Union, but mostly through the United States.
I mean, the fact is, if he has it, you know he's a lunatic enough to use it.
Uh-huh. Well, let me just say one more thing. You know, he's not the only lunatic in the world that has this capability. There's all kinds of people in South America and in Asia and in Africa that also have this capability.
Name
what
one.
Are we going to do about them? Why do we keep supplying them with the material?
Name one? Who are all these maniacs with the capability to launch a nuclear attack?
Well, let's see. Israel has nuclear capabilities. I think very likely if anybody will use it first, they will. South Africa has nuclear capabilities. That doesn't make me feel very comfortable. Right now, the Soviet Union is moving into anarchy. They've got nuclear potential. Of course, we didn't supply them, but, the point stands. India has nuclear capabilities. Why? They can't even feed their own people.
Another thing, a lot of your callers, they should learn how to pronounce nuclear. I'm tired of hearing nuclear.
Okay, all right.
Right, I know that's trivial. Another thing is, Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, if this movement, this like anti-war movement, why do they have to march in the streets? Is this just for some kind of media attention, or what is this? I don't understand this.
Well, demonstrators generally march in the streets.
Right. Do you really think they have a full knowledge of what's happening, or do you think they just want to?
Well, I don't think anybody has a full
part
knowledge
of this countercultural phenomenon.
Well, I don't think anybody has a 100% understanding of what's going on, but if you feel a certain way, I think you're obligated to state that.
In other words, peace, better red than dead, the whole thing like that, that's how we go.
Well, it's, not everybody is going to be 100% correct on these things. Not everybody is going to understand everything they're talking about, but if you feel a certain way, you should not let anybody stand in your way, period.
I agree.
All right, thanks for calling. Tony, can I take one more call?
Of course you can.
Okay.
By all means.
Tony White is here. He's going to be on after me. Why, it's, so much more peaceful having Tony White around than the Power Surge people. Tony's just so mellow, and he's got some good stuff for you coming up. So, let's take one more call. Who's going to be the lucky person? I sure wish everybody would call like this at the beginning of the show. Then we'd be able to get to everybody. Remember, everybody that's on the phone right now, you have a 1 in 5 chance of being picked. Okay? But if you don't get picked, call back next time. We're on between 10 and 12. All right. Good evening. You're the lucky person. Hello? Okay, you don't want to be a lucky person. We have another lucky person. Good evening. You're the second lucky person.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, I can't believe how calm you are with all these poor, pitiful souls that don't seem to understand that about peace.
Well, it's like I said before, I don't like to, always jump on people who disagree with me. Sometimes I just like to sit back and let them have their say, and eventually they'll say something that'll get people thinking,
I really admire your, not being emotional, and that's where peace begins, from within. And, I marched against the Vietnam War, and I was down in Washington a couple of weeks ago, and I was really impressed with how peaceful everybody was, and
it was amazing. It really was.
Yeah, and I think it's, I think what we're going to have to do besides demonstrate, which is a democratic process, is perhaps, you know, deny ourselves some of, you know, our joyriding. I mean, there's nothing like hitting this war effort in the pocketbook. I mean, fasting wouldn't hurt for 2 days or 3 days. Boycott eating and gasoline. I mean, you know, even maybe not going to class or your job, you know, you can impact. I mean, so we'll suffer, but we'll all suffer much more if this nuclear, I tell you, if we go into a nuclear, you know, arena, our jobs, and I mean, this is such a tiny, fragile planet that I think, you know, if you think about joyriding or, you know, boycotting economically by fasting or not driving your car, making a demonstration that way, you know, the little things you can't do right now are going to seem, you know, awfully trivial compared to alternatives, you know.
That's the tragedy of the situation. We don't see the full picture. We don't see how other folks around the world are suffering.
Yeah,
and as long as we're able to, you know, to buy our gas at $1.29, you know, a gallon, we're happy and we think everything is okay, and that's the most important thing in the world. It's not. There's so much else happening that we have no conception about, and we've got to expand our minds and try to take this all in.
Absolutely, and I think one thing that really does help is, in the words of John Lennon, keep playing those mind games together. Because I mean, if enough of us link up, you know, if you follow your heart, and your guts will tell you what's right or wrong. It doesn't even take a great. I mean, I don't care to think that these military experts know any more than I do, and my heart is a mother of a 22-year-old.
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, I think that's really scary when people say, well, you don't know. You know, I'm one of the only people at work that won't wear a yellow ribbon because it's so misconstrued. And I refuse to be considered unpatriotic because maybe I am unpatriotic because I think globally, you know.
No, I don't think you are at all. I think that's something that we've got to shake. People that stand up for peace are, how could they be unpatriotic?
Well, I think more in lines of the planet, rather. I mean, you know, we are so self-righteous, but we still produce pesticides in Kentucky, which aren't allowed in this country, but we ship them to third world countries, and they send them back to us on the food chain. So how can we be so outraged by anything, you know?
I believe the best way to counter this, first of all, is to communicate, you know. Various actions are effective, but I think the most effective thing you can do is talk to other people, make them realize that you know, this controversial view we're espousing is not a threat. It's not something anti-American. And again, respond to those people that say, if you know, America, if you don't love it, leave it. I say, if you don't love it, change it.
Right.
And that's our obligation. That's everyone's obligation. And that's something that our forefathers entrusted us with.
Absolutely.
We're going to have to go because...
thank you so much.
Thanks for calling, though.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye. I hope to hear from everybody else in the weeks to come. And, I will, won't I, Tony? Tony, are you going to be here every week?
Am I going to be here every week?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to see me every single week.
Wow.
That's
something. Oh.
You see me on the latter part, but for tonight, you see me on from midnight to Thursday.
Okay, well, Tony White is coming up. I want to thank everybody who called in. And it's 8 minutes after 12 o'clock. Boy, you know, I'm distracted by all this. Just reading one story about nuclear bombs is enough to throw me for an entire week. Folks, keep on thinking, please. And talk to other people. And we'll see you back here next week, huh? Going to go out with a song called Just Say No, which I understand Lister is responsible for, huh? All right, let's listen to this together and stay tuned for Tony.
Just say no! Just say no!
Military consideration.
The American soldiers in the Saudi Arabia desert.
What we need when we need.
Read the newspaper just the other day. And heavy storm clouds are rolling our way. They want to send me to the desert to play a deadly game. Onto the seas, homeboy ready to murder a man.
Got no say in this matter, did you ask how I feel? Chumps like me, a dime a dozen, think we don't know the deal. I ain't dying for the price of gas. Yo, Uncle Sam, you can kiss my ass.
When it's day to go,
just say no.
So when it's day to go,
just say no.
To the plug, cause we about to G.O.
than John Wayne. To go and die for you, I'd have to be insane. There's no glory in disaster. Once the wheels of war start to turn, test to tell me what's the next step, sucker. When the oil fields start to burn, burn, burn.
When the oil fields start to burn.
Military considerations.
New York, Paris, London, Rome. Young men and women dragged away from home. Sydney, Berlin, Baghdad, Tel Aviv. Saving all at each other for the soul. There's a free day to go.
Just say no.
So when they say to go,
just say no
to the vote, cause we about to be yo.
Just say no.
So when they say to go,
just say no
to the vote, cause we about to be yo.
Rich man's war.
Some people seem to think it'll all be over quick. What about Vietnam?
Bobby James,
tricky dick. George Bush high riding on a wooden horse, charging in guns blazing, condemning deadly force. They like to have us believe they're defending democracy, but anyone with eyes can see that's a fallacy.
Tired of your race, not a democratic state. Two women on the street, you will show their face.
So when you say to go,
just say no.
The human race, you want to fight a war? South Africa's the place. There's an injustice in the motherland, but no, you want to go out and plan to stand. I'm tired of you waving that flag in my face. I'm not gonna fight for your fat rap race. I'm not a sucker politician or a money hungry bitch, so wake up. Dead. Talking about drugs and crime in the street. Walking wounded, picking through garbage, trick or treat.
Hey boy, you want the job, drop your nuts in the sand. When I blow smoke up your ass, drive you crazy, and make you kill for the man.
You a jockey and a hypocrite. You have to be blind not to see through this. This is Mr. Bush's show. He wants you to play a role. Remind he's out from the 14th hole.
Bush should be closing in on about the 14th hole.
Don't believe Brian Dumbo's big media shit. I'm telling you, brother, he's got to resist. The army don't care about heroes and society. You gotta refuse, don't be another body. So when they say to go,
just say no
to the flow, cause we about to go. And you know we gonna break these chains of the mind.
No.
And I find it's the race for mankind. The people, the popular
side. Just say no.
The cause stacks in his favor. But tell me, niggas, see it takes the flavor.
No.
Hi, this is Matt with the concert billboard for Sunday, February 10th. Tonight, Michael Livingston and the Rebels will be at New York Avenue in Huntington. Thursday night, Slayer and Testament will be at the Nassau Coliseum. Friday the 15th, Dr. John will be at IMAC. Agnostic Front will be at Sundance. Special Ed will be in the Stony Brook Union Ballroom. And Bad Religion and the Radics will be at the Marquee. February 16th, there will be a benefit concert for WUSB in the Union Bi-Level here at Stony Brook, featuring the Bug Out Society, Born Against, the Voodoo, and the Voodoo Love Gods. On the 16th also, Urban Dance Squad, 24-7 Spies, and the Sweet Lizard Il Tet will be at the Academy. Fish will be at the Marquee, and Pablo Moses will be in the Stony Brook Union Ballroom. On February 18th, the Feelies, Driving and Crying, Material Issue, and Trash Can Sinatras will be at the Ritz, and In Excess will be at the Nassau Coliseum. On February 19th, Rembrandts, The Rembrandts, will be at the Marquee. February 22nd, War and Peace will be at Sundance. Neil Young and Crazy Horse, Sonic Youth, and Social Distortion will be at the Nassau Coliseum. Saturday, February 23rd, Living Color and Urban Dance Squad will be in the Stony Brook Gym. The Five Blind Boys of Alabama will be at IMAC, and Mark Isham will be at the Symphony Space. On the 28th, The Charlatans UK and The Cave Dogs will be at the Ritz. Flora Porum and Erto will be at IMAC on March 2nd. March 8th, Bo Diddley, The Big Town Playboys, and Satan and Adam will be at the Marquee. Joe Piscopo will be at the Westbury Music Fair, and Creator will be at Sundance. On March 9th, Kenny Rankin will be at IMAC. March 14th, Inspiral Carpets will be at the Marquee. March 16th, James Cotton will be at IMAC, and Buddy Guy and Coco Taylor will be at the Marquee. Concert Billboard is brought to you four times each weekday at 3 and 9 a.m., 4:30 and 10 p.m., and on weekends at 12 noon and 12 midnight. Just in case you missed anything, give us a call here at WUSB at 516-632-6901. And stay tuned to WUSB throughout the week for ticket giveaways. This is Matt here on WUSB Stony Brook, where unique sounds begin.
You're about to enter another dimension. A dimension not only of sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land of imagination. Next stop.
WUSB Stony Brook.